start broadcast. Hi, Jack Skype. Speak away, Mariana.
Hello, hello, everybody. Please tell me you can hear me because I just cannot bear it anymore. I must talk.
Bingo, we've got it. That I can see the levels going out and stuff now.
Okay,
so
I
that
not shout then,
cause yeah, you've probably just deafened everybody, but that's fine. Yeah, so let's forget. I'm just going to turn Skype off. So now we're doing bits and pieces, and we've started. Let's not try anything else but just talk. And what I'll do, yeah. So we're on bullet 72, Mariana, and it's quite a short one. And it says, DS106 introduced me to Radiolab. Inspirational. So tell us about Radiolab, because I have this horrible feeling that I can't remember anything about it and not even sure if I knew about it when I saw the link. So tell me about Radiolab. Nicecast says it is broadcasting. So I can see your... Yeah, I can see you've gone away. Ah, right, hang. Wait a minute. No, let's go. Right, try again, Marianne.
Working on it.
That's it now. It's okay now.
106 spell. I'm just sending a little message to everyone. I think if John doesn't want me to talk to them, I will talk to them on Twitter.
No, I think I've released you.
Have you released me from my prison?
Yeah,
now?
And I can, yeah.
I keep thinking it's my machine that's messing.
No, it's nothing to do with your machine. There's two things going on. One, the first one was I didn't understand the way loopback works yet, or it is broken in some way. I haven't figured out. But the second thing. Is that, yeah, we've got you out now. The second thing is that because I've, once things go wrong, they start keeping on going wrong. But we're all good now. So we're talking about Radiolab, Mariana, and you were just explaining a wee bit about the basics. So let's go from there.
Well, that gave me time to look up what the tagline is for Radiolab. So it's a... It works. It's a kind of online thing, as far as I know, and it's on radiolab.org, and it says it's a radio show and podcast weaving stories and science into sound and music-rich documentaries. Well, there's a definition. It's just wonderful. Let's just see if people can hear. Yes, you've released me. Hello, everybody. He's got me away from the prison now. Released. So that's what Radiolab is, and I had never heard of Radiolab before DS106, and I did, and listening to it initially, I just love the program because of what it does, of course, because it's not just a straightforward factual thing and science thing, but actually they do a lot of the kinds of things that we do on DS106 radio, with, you know, using the sound editor a lot of, you know, it's very highly produced, so they do a lot of different things, demonstrating and talking about, you know, science or in sometimes difficult subjects, but they do it in a way that is entertaining. And then, of course, there is Dreamy Jad, who does it, as well as other people who started it, and who and I just think he's just brilliant in terms of partly that his voice is wonderful to tell stories, and if we do listen to some of it, we'll get some snippets a bit later. But also, he really gets this idea of, you know, kind of what we are doing today. He really gets the whole notion of futzing and creativity and how you cannot plan for creativity and how, you know, you can't be efficient and creative and a lot of what he talks about when people ask him about, you know, the success of Radiolab and what makes it successful is really about, you know, what I consider to be some of the fundamentals of creative thinking, really, which is...
Yeah, so I'm looking at, you sent a link to this, and we'll put it in the show notes, his video on embrace the gut churn of the creative process, and he's got various things that he thinks are important. I'm just reading through his show notes, which has got bits for different sections of the audio, and one he's got is being in a blind panic 20 minutes before a Radiolab episode. And I think that's maybe where I've gone wrong.
Because you're not in a blind panic.
I've been sitting about sort of relaxed and eating an apple, and then suddenly we're on, and if I had been in a blind panic a wee bit before, I would have maybe sorted a few things out before we go live. So I'm going to take that to heart, and 20 minutes before 8 o'clock next week.
What he talks about the being in a blind panic thing. We should put a note. We will put a note off for the YouTube talk, so that we're talking about. So in case people haven't heard him talk about, it is called gut churn, and it is really just about, you know, what makes Radiolab a good thing, but really it's about creativity. And this thing is that they, as I was just saying, the show is highly edited and produced, so it's really complex. So it's not the kind of thing that you can improvise, like, you know, you and I can. Hmm. And they started to do some live performances a while back. They had this show which they had prepared, and the computer died, and they had about 3,000 people waiting for them.
Well, there we go. Just because.
So the story about that, about being in a blind panic and what you do, I think it's really interesting. This idea, he says, and it's interesting in the light of what we talk about in connection with radio, DS106 radio and Fatsing. He says that he thinks that the essence of whether or not we are able to be creative has to do with how we deal with that moment, because we all experience those moments when everything goes wrong and you suddenly think, you know, press the button doesn't work when you've got an audience waiting and so on. And so his whole thing is actually, well, so what do you do? And in that example, what they did is they did a bit of futzing around the thing. They had to restart all the computers. They had to do something with the electrics and all that. So they kept their audience waiting for something like 25 minutes, he said. And it was the most horrible thing. And it wasn't the best, the best show that they ever did. But they did it, even though they had to keep the audience waiting. And that's his whole thing about what do you do? And then he also talked in relation to this panic and the gut churn. He said that at the beginning of Radiolab, it always used to feel like it was a matter of life and death. Would they survive the program? Mm-hmm. And he said, and that happened even though, he said, it was just a radio show, and even though nobody was listening. Which, again, if you think about how we talk about the radio and the reason why, from a DS106 perspective, doing the radio thing is a good way to learn how to do some of this digital storytelling. We often talk about that the kind of idea of an audience. Mm-hmm. Even if we've got a million listeners, but, you know, the idea in other situations, you know, just the idea of an audience changes how you interact, and it makes you perform differently and so on. And I thought it was interesting in this thing where he's basically saying, you know, it needs to kind of really matter to you, and you know, in this situation, and even if nobody's listening, you still are trying to do the very best you can, knowing that you can't plan for a lot of it, knowing that things are always going to go wrong and that you need to work with it. And that you need to use everything that happens. He uses this idea of always using what happens in order to, in order to kind of build on whatever happens in the moment, whether it was something you expected or whether it wasn't. And this notion of, you know, always reframing it in relation to what you're trying to do with your audience, which, I mean, they're all things that I think are very wise.
Yeah, no, it sounds
as
good.
Well, as well as being dreamy and wonderful.
Well, it's a dreamy bit. I'm not. I don't know if I'll get that, but I'll take your word for it. Maybe I will. So they seem to have a huge following. They said it gets about 2 million people per month listening on Radiolab. So it sounds a fantastic setup, and we will pop in the show notes. It's a wee bit long to play.
But his thing is about also that, you know, this kind of sense of gut churn and that sense of, you know, oh, will we survive this? That because a lot of what they do, they have the bits for the program, clearly the ones that are pre-prepared, but they tend to improvise how they put the bits together.
Mm-hmm.
And so his thing is that, you know, maybe some of this kind of sense of, you know, stage fright, somebody was saying on Twitter, that sense of, you know, my God, this is a terrible thing, maybe also about the fact that, you know, you're working live in a very real sense, in that you're not working from a template. You don't, and in his case, I guess it would be the same as you and me. You're working with two people, so you don't know where one person is going to take something, and that working away from this template adds to the, you know, he calls it radical uncertainty, which of course adds to that sense of stress because you have no idea where you're going.
I think, I mean, you do get quite comfortable with that process, and I suppose maybe there's the odd when you interrupt or something that can be at the wrong time, but it does make for quite a nice flow, I think, to do something live between several people or two people. I've noticed an awful lot of podcasts. When podcasting came out, I think there was an awful lot of single voice podcasts, but now you get quite a lot which are double handers, and I think it's a very interesting way to do something, because you can have question and answer and you can have flow back and forward.
And I think there is something about there's the unpredictability. Then there is, of course, the obvious things that you learn when you do improvisational theatre, which is, you know, how you build on what the person is saying, how, you know, you work with yes and rather than, you know, yes but thing. And that's how, you know, improvisational actors kind of do their thing. You always build on, you know, and the story might be the craziest story ever, but you never go, oh no, that's a load of crap, I want to take the story this way. And in a way, I think with radio, when you're doing the kind of thing like you and I are doing with, you know, it's you know, loosely structured, unless you have that kind of that sense of building on what the other person is saying and working with the other person, I suspect that, you know, it would be a very difficult thing to do. You know, if I just kept saying no, you're wrong, John.
Well, I suppose that then becomes question time or something. It becomes some sort of aggressive political radio format or something like that.
Or like Mr. Cogdor the other day when he invited me and then he went to answer the door and left me holding the baby or the S106 radio.
Yeah. That's quite a good tactic though, if you're running out of things to say. You just press the button that sounds like a doorbell and off you trot. Yeah,
Well, that was really funny, because it's like, for a moment, you know, it's like if you suddenly disappear, because, you know, again, it's that thing that you are building your sense of having a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, you're having a conversation with your listeners, which for us, it's a lot easier with Twitter, because you can do that more so. I guess it's harder with something like Radiolab, where you're not necessarily directly talking to your people. But it was really interesting when suddenly Alan left you know, when I was on doing that thing, and I'm going, did he go? And what do I do now? What do I talk about? Because you just suddenly kind of lose the flow of having the person and interacting with another person. But it's like, what do we do with moments like that, which I really like about how he says, you know, it's not like, oh my God, it was terrible. Is you just do what you can, you work through it, and you live to, you know, to do another program, I guess.
And I know on another podcast I do, the sort of Veggie Talk one, I sort of quote the guy, David Noble, who sort of runs it with me. He quite often says that dead air is quite useful sometimes. It just gives the listeners a wee bit of thinking space, and it might, you know, we are expecting that people who are listening to us are doing something else at the same time, and it might, you know, it might not be such a terrible thing. You know, you always go, oh no, we can't have dead air, but maybe it's not that terrible, you know.
The other thing, of course, is, you know, and in this talk, you know, Jad also talks about it. He says, you know, also sometimes, you know, you're tasked with doing something different, or you decide that you want to do something different, and actually your listeners don't like it. And he played a number of, you know, it was a kind of fictionalized thing of all the feedback that they had when they first went, you know, big in their, you know, in their world. Mm-hmm. And they've replaced, they replaced his pro. They put his program instead of something called, I think it was called Fresh Air. I've never heard it, so I can't comment. Anyway, apparently they had, you know, like a zillion calls of people complaining about what a terrible thing this radio lab was and how they should just immediately can it. It made for great reading because the radio was very kind and sent him an Excel spreadsheet with all the feedback that they had. It was terrible. So, you know, there is that kind of tension, I think, between, you know, when you feel that you are doing something that is satisfying to you artistically, you know, whatever, however that might be, and that actually sometimes, you know, that may not be what your audience in that moment wants. But what he said is that audience then left, and then they got a different audience, and they gathered, you know, an audience that liked what they did, which I guess is what happens.
Yeah, well, I suppose people come and go. I just noticed there that somebody's on the Twitter saying some podcasts use repeated music as punctuation, and we always kind of intended to have bits of audio in the middle where we would play things or bumpers or wee bits of short audio, but we don't do it very much.
We end up talking to each other all
That's it. I think it's if you're people who like to talk, then you tend to just talk. Having said that, we've got here, do you want to have a listen to some of this podcast number one?
Oh, let me say something. And I promise I won't be shy. But yes, it's a nice, I mean, I don't know how the quality either, how it will be. But in preparing for today, I was looking because I remembered I'd done something with a Radio Lab and other things that I'd listened to. And I found this thing with which John is about to play a little bit of, which was the very first podcast that I ever created and put together. And it was my way of doing a podcast for reflection and summary of Audio Week when I did the DS106 Headless. And it was actually really quite sweet. I went, oh, how nice. Look, she did her first podcast and she was all proud.
Okay, well, let's.
But it will say, basically what it has is snippets, let me just say something, snippets of what we've just been talking about. So Radio Lab and Jad has got snippets of Ira Glass saying some of the things that, you know, also are important about how do you tell a story. It's got snippets of the guy who created the sound effects for WALL-E and how he did it. So what it is, it's lots of little bits of quotes and things of things that I found interesting after doing Radio Week.
Brilliant. Okay. Now, this is where I'll try and get it going properly.
Welcome. Welcome to my first podcast. In this podcast, I want to review the audio week, and I've decided to do that through selecting a few clips that, for me, have been the nuggets of audio week. There have been many. I have learned an immense amount, and I've still got an immense amount to learn. I have enjoyed audio week more than I thought I would, and I hope you enjoy some of these clips that I've selected for you.
Etc., etc., they're all different. Same amount of weight, but different sound colours. And that's basically what we are. We're just human beings, but we all have our own little sound colours, as it were, that make up these extraordinary personalities and characters and interests and things.
To kill, and it's time to enjoy the killing, because by killing, you will make something else even better live. And I think that, like, describe it, it's like there's a gap, that for the first couple of years that you're making stuff, what you're making isn't so good, okay? It's not that great. It's really not that great. It's trying to be good. It has ambition to be good, but it's not quite that good. But your taste, the thing that got you into the game, your taste is still killer. And your taste is good enough that you can tell that what you're making is kind of a disappointment to you. You know what I mean? Like it is they wanted it to be. They knew it felt short. You know, and some of us can admit that to ourselves, and some of us are a little less able to admit that to ourselves. Often people submit stories to our radio show, which show, I don't know how to say this except that it shows that they have a horrible personality, which is to say, they're like somebody who only talks about themselves. And when somebody's got a good personality, it's like somebody who's in a good in a conversation. They talk amusingly and interestingly about themselves for a while, and then they let the other person talk for a while because they're interested in other people and they're interested in the world.
When I walked up the stairs to come into the studio, you know, the sun was out and the sun had this weird kind of peachy white hue that was kind of like the color of a fox's belly or something. Like, you maybe just imagine something, right? Well, think of what just happened there. Like, in a sense, I'm painting something, but I'm not holding the paintbrush. You are. Deep act of co-authorship. And in that is some potential for empathy, I think. That somehow we're doing this co-imagining that happens if I do my job right.
I mean, I was just fucking around, really. But I cannot tell you why that collection of noises was important. It sounds kind of quaint to me now. But when we heard it the next day, it was the first time that we actually had heard it. You know, in storytelling, we talk about pointing arrows. It's like those moments in the story where you cue the audience that something is important. You know, you say something like, and that's the moment where everything changed. You know, that's a pointing arrow. It's saying, listen up, this is important. Something that we heard it, and we thought, wow, that's interesting. It's a pointing arrow. Let's follow that. So my point, I guess if I have a point, is that to whatever degree Radiolab represents change, we didn't plan it. Like, I don't think change can be planned. I think it's only something that can be recognized after the fact. When we're talking, there's not this. There's not a distance. You know, it's just we're all on a road trip together. So I think about no plexiglass when we're doing science explainers, which we do a lot, because there's a gravitational pull towards teaching and lecturing, but that's not what we do. You know, we discover with a listener. Don't tell me about dolphinhood. Be a dolphin. Get inside the dolphin and explain the information that way, which is an impossible task. But
start of message.
Bring back fresh air to WNYC-FM.
Sorry, I find Radiolab incredibly annoying and overproduced.
Distractingly overproduced.
Esoteric and obtuse.
Soulless.
What happened today? Radiolab versus fresh air? Big programming mistake. Just turned off the radio. Again.
Someone got into your workstation for Christmas.
Message 18.
Please bring back fresh air.
Why? Can a QT switch get boring?
No. those are just a little sampling, because what happens is they actually put the comments in an Excel spreadsheet. They're nice enough to send it to you. And so when I read that spreadsheet, I mean, pages and pages and pages of just vitriolic. Like, who the hell are you guys? That knocked me on my ass. That was some serious gut churn in that moment.
So what do you remember about the beginning?
What do you mean, like how we got it on the air?
Well, about... Like, if you step back from the particulars, like, and you just think broadly about, like, that time, what sticks in your mind the most?
Gut churn.
Gut churn.
like years and years of being sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
I remember sitting at my desk for long stretches of time just kind of rubbing my head.
Your beginning, middle, and end to a story. A quote like, "The paper process begins," provides an obvious start. This is also the introduction of a thread that's going to run throughout the piece. By thread, I mean a narrative line, a sequence of events that the story centers around and we return to again and again. And make note of this.
I can always see a new life in it, what it could become.
Think metaphorically. When Joanne says that line, she's not only talking about paper, she's also talking about herself. I suggested earlier that this story is about Joanne making a piece of paper, and it's also about Joanne becoming who she is. It's a very light-handed metaphor, but it's there. The metaphor is introduced when Joanne tells us she can see what a piece of paper can become. Next, Joanne talks about how no two pieces of paper are alike. Then she talks about going along with whatever is going to happen, which is what happened to her when she visited Bethlehem. She fell in love with the place and decided to move there. She went with the flow. Is this metaphor making sense?
Sound, and I'll start listening to motors and, you know, ambient sounds and things I've recorded, and I can generate other sounds in the studio on a synthesizer, and then I can also vocalize sounds. I'm improvising until I discover something that seems right to me, then I'll audition it for Andrew Stanton and he'll guide me further. I start experimenting by just acting the part out myself. And at first I shot too low. Sometimes I'm amused if I stop for a moment listening to one of the films I've worked on and I try to remember what the sources of many of the sounds are. Oh yeah, that's my grandfather's shortwave radio. Oh yeah, and that's my daughter crying slowed down and I'm using it as a laser sound or something. Those things really happen. But you know, once they get translated into the sounds in a movie, even I can forget where it came from. And then I can...
Really, once he came on and started developing the core sound of WALL-E, we were just like, yes, you know, this is what we were looking for.
We've always tried to give Eve kind of very soothing, high-tech, quiet tonalities, almost like little bits of music. And there's a mystery, there's a sense of energy and enchantment with her. It's kind of a soft kind of background kind of idea with sound. And then it's an old war movie on TV. There was a private ranking, a generator, to provide power for the Army radio in the field. I found one of these old Army generators on eBay. And it's a sound we use for WALL-E when he has to be quiet. And you can see he's not going very fast. Tasmanian devil spinning in a circle.
How can I learn to perceive sound colors? Can I learn how to clap for snow or for rain? How will my stories work with anecdote, have a beat, raise a question in the listener's mind, and also contain moments of reflection that are worthy of listening to? What does it mean to have good taste? How do I know a sound is good or bad for my purposes? Have I got the stomach for a third of what I make to get killed? Do I have courage to kill the story? Will I know how to abandon the crap? Let me always remember that I have good taste, but not the means to produce it, at the start at least. Will I recognize if I have a horrible personality? I know in my heart that good story is not about people with horrible personalities who talk about themselves, but about those who take turns as in real conversation. How do I show them how to see other people through my eyes rather than just talk about myself from my own experience? Radio stories are a deep act of co-authorship. Words are a brush that paints a picture in somebody's mind. If I can feel the gap of the pictureless, it means we have connected. The value is in immediacy and co-imagining what happens if I tell the story well. The power of radio is located in the human voice. I believe that gut churn is needed for creation. It is that feeling that everything seizes up. All I can ask is, will I survive? A key criterion seems to be the alignment of my interests as a listener with the content of the radio program. We have to put in pointing arrows in stories. How will I remember to do that? And that is the moment when everything changed. A pointing arrow is not the same as knowing the destination. We do not know where we're going. Remember, don't tell me about the thing. Be that thing. This is a tension I struggle with every day, but I have no answer. What do you make of a moment like that? The feedback we got felt like a tiger was after me. Milton Erickson talks about reframing. He says that we always have to listen to what the client brings. A tension between vision and flexibility. The vision to create something and the flexibility to listen to what the client, in this case the environment, brings to us. And finding that it is in that friction that creating happens. It's a hard balance to find. I love the idea of audio paragraph indents, which must be created just like in the written page. And the sentence that I used as the title for this podcast, sound is like touch at a distance. Don't talk about something, be it. How much production is okay? If I enhance audio, is it my thing or their thing? Well, radio is better for the abstract, but if Joe is dying, then go TV.
I think it's more, we're used to thinking of sounds like that as being about something, because that speech is always about something. But it feels to me more like touch, where touch isn't about something. If you whack me on the arm in a sudden sharp way, I'm going to be startled. Or a gentle touch has a different effect. And I think, you know, actually, sound is kind of touch at a distance. It seems to me more like touch. Sound is kind of touch at a distance.
So, Arianna, sound is like touch at a distance.
Isn't that the most wonderful expression when you think about radio and what it does and why we like it?
Yeah.
It's from Radio Lab. It's one they did one they did one around, you know, the science really of sound and so on. And one of the people they interviewed was a psychologist who specialized in you know, sound and understanding. And it's her expression that, you know, she kind of thinks of sound. She thinks of sound as touch at a distance.
Oh.
Because, you know, that this thing that also I think Ira Glass says and other people who do radio say, that there is so much that the human voice carries and that you can use in all sorts of different ways. that so that if it's used well, it's like like a sense of being there in the presence of the person. Theoretically, right? The idea of you're having no distance from your listeners, that your listeners feel like you are there in their living room type thing. I think it's a wonderful expression.
Yeah, it's lovely. I mean, I feel tonight I've been sort of reaching out at the radio and poking people and slapping them in the face rather than due to excessive futzing. But that was a super podcast, especially actually the bit I liked best was your bit at the end. It just was really nicely timed, I think. So enjoyed that,
because that was just really about all of the different questions that I had and all of the different things that kind of seemed interesting to me from having. It was my first time listening to Jad, listening to Ira Glass, listening to all these people that just have wonderful things to say about how do you tell stories, how do you do it well, and how do you use audio in an effective way. There really are such wonderful people to listen to. I think that's what you hear in the podcast, which is why I wasn't, I thought, oh, it's a silly thing because it was my first one and the quality isn't great and there's all sorts of things that one could critique. However, the thing that I thought came through was just how it was. It's like a little kid in a sweet shop, it's like I'd found all these things and I'd learned all these things. And I think that comes through in that last little bit, when I'm kind of going, what about this? And what about this? And how do I do that?
I really like the pace of your voice in that particular.
It's a lovely thing, to learn, to have the opportunity to learn that. And then in our case, we've kind of, where you've carried on doing it, in other settings. For me, I only do it in the context of the S106. But, that starting from a place of saying audio, I'm not so sure that you actually then, get to the place where you see the magic of it and the specialness of it. It's lovely. It's one of the gifts that I have in the S106.
Yeah, I mean, the very first time it was, I think, quite a number of years ago when I just was in school and I had a class of 10-year-olds and I'd set them a piece of writing to go home and sit at a window and just write what they saw outside their window and what they thought and what they felt and what they heard. And they did particularly nice pieces of writing, I thought, and I decided to try and record it. And one or two of them I just thought were great. And a wee while ago I went back and listened, and we'd recorded it in a cupboard beside the heater. And we'd record it on Windows Voice Recorder, I think it was, which only, as far as I was aware, only let you do a minute. So I had done all these minutes and then sort of glued them together. It was appalling, but the actual content was lovely. I thought, the kids had done just a great job because it obviously caught their imagination to do that, just to look out their window and think about what they felt and stuff. So
there is something really special. And then, of course, you can read it and it will have an impact, but there is something about the audio and what the voice carries that, the touch at a distance thing and how it connects us and how, if you use it well, it can help, tell a story and it can draw people in and all of that, which... I kind of would say I knew to some extent because of a lot of what I do is public speaking, or used to be, I should say. But it's a different thing, the kind of quality of, the sort of things that Ira Glass says, or, Jad says about the how do you, make a story come alive. It's a different kind of thing, because really it's about the what troubles that you're not even aware of, in terms of, because it's not about the content of your words, because it's like that thing that you said at the beginning where, you know, most people, when they're listening to radio, they are not really just listening to radio. They are doing other things. And so it is like, as you are talking, you're keeping people company in a way. And that's something about the quality of your voice, the pace of your voice, well, all of that, that says something about you, really, whatever your content.
Yeah.
It's what leads me to say that Jad is dreamy.
Yeah. He's got a dreamy voice.
Well, he does, because it's not the looks. Yeah. Let's face it, it's not the looks.
Poor Jad. Judge there, Jad, I'm afraid.
If people who are listening don't know him and have a look at the photo somewhere, you know, it's not really the looks that make him dreamy, but he does have a wonderful voice.
I'll be listening and see if I pick up some tips then. I am. Sort of in other DS106 news, I have been just completely busy at work this week, and I can't remember if I did a daily create or not, but that would have been it if I did one, I think. Is there anything that's caught your attention in DS106 this week?
What have we done daily create wise? One of the things that seems to be happening is the Western 106 theme. Alan did say that this is what he would do, that he would keep for all the weeks that Western 106 was supposed to run as some kind of formal course, that he was going to keep the daily create on theme, as it were. And people seem to be really liking that. There are lots and lots of responses in each one during the week. They are all kind of around, you know, this sort of Western theme. There's anything that caught my eye. No, the math problem was that yesterday. That one I looked at and I thought, what do I do with this? You know, you kind of, it was the prompt was something like math problems, but, you know, one of these word math problems. And then, you know, do something that was in some way connected. And again, a lot of people did. I just did a silly joke.
Yeah. Very often that works quite well, I think, for the daily
date. Spike. Oh, poor Spike. Don't you dare say that he's a pain. He's lovely, Spike. You better go and play with him. I'm glad that he's been listening up until now. This is David. This is David on Twitter.
Yeah, I see that with an audience of people and animals, which is quite
good. I know, I tell you. That's, you know, see, we lost Spike now. He's not. He wants to be distracted and playing.
And what I mean, was
but yes, the you know, there are some that are. I just didn't know what to do with this one. So there was the math problems, but there was all this triple trolling thing.
I just didn't get an idea for that. But I always like those ones, and especially with the nice Western art and stuff that people have been digging up. And just on that, and then a bit of twittering today about resources, and one of them was in the New York something or other museum, and it was old posters and things, and the second one down when I visited was a Western one. It was a cover from the book The Plainsman, and I thought there was probably some scope for doing something there.
That might be a nice one, because I mean it must be really hard to keep the theme going. For you know, because it's 15 odd weeks that he, I guess, he's planning on doing that, and it must be quite hard. My favorite this week has to go to Ron, because Ron did, you know, he likes Ronald 2008 on Twitter, and you know he likes to do coloring black and white photos.
Oh, I saw the.
And he did the Annie Oakley one.
Yeah, it's.
And he's getting really good, because at the start, you know, I think he was a bit, I'm not sure about this, but now I think he's getting much more confident, and he's doing some, you know, really they are beautiful things. I can imagine it being a really therapeutic activity, because you know people are, you know, it's the latest thing, this you know, coloring and as a way of relaxing and being mindful, etc. And you see people doing it on the tube and places now in London, And you know, I think this is a kind of grown-up version of that.
Yeah. I saw a friend of mine who was taking public domain black and white pictures and colouring them, and he was using a vector app that took a picture and vectorised it so that maybe could fill it, I guess, colour it in like that, you know. I think Ron's probably doing an iPad app.
Yes, I don't know what he uses. He has told me, but because it's not something that I'm, you know, I probably would want to do immediately. I haven't, I don't know exactly what he uses. It is probably an iPad thing, but there is something, you know, I think really lovely about it. They kind of, you know, the black and white pictures seem to come alive. And this last one, the Annie Oakley one, I thought was really very beautiful. It's just subtle and somehow, you know, I would say it's my favorite thing for this week. You know, it was one of the ones I liked the best.
It looks at that stuff that Ron did looks a wee bit like those coloured, you know, black and white photographs that have been coloured. I think they were all plates, and they actually hand coloured the plates, and it has a bit of a tint for that. It looks like that.
Yeah, it's good. And then we're going to have folding gifts in DS106 soon, thanks to John Johnston's Wii Apps.
Well, I'm going to try and look at that. I've got a big to-do list at the moment. I've actually written a to-do list. I've got so much to do. I don't usually write to-do lists, but I have.
You put folding gifts at the top of your list.
Yeah, hopefully I'll get to it, because it looks as if it's just a nice JavaScript library you could drop onto a web page, and it would allow you to fold things, which adds another dimension, I guess, to having fun on the internet with gifts. Which,
maybe on that note,
it's a semi-profession here, but yeah. So yeah, on that note, I think we probably should wrap up. I'm going to maybe play a wee bumper out. Is that?
That sounds like a plan.
And let's.
Bye, everybody.
We shall.
DS106 Radio for Life.
See you next week, because we are for life, and we will futz less.
Good spell. We're John and Mary on a good spell. It's off and on, and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go and give them a tweet. The DS106 Good Spell Show.
That's it. Good night.